entertainment, inspiration, and building community. This is the soundtrack of Savannah. This is your Savannah Philharmonic. Welcome to the Soundtrack of Savannah podcast, brought to you by the Savannah Philharmonic. It is the meeting of the executive director minds on this episode. I'm excited to have executive director Amy Williams with me, as well as executive director of the Savannah Music Festival, Gene Dobbs Bradford. Welcome to this podcast, my friend.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
We're excited to have you.
I'm really excited to be here with you.
Yeah, and I mean, the state's largest musical arts event, mm-hmm. and you do it in the peak of azalea season. I'm not sure how you manage that.
Yeah, but I guess we just were living right.
As we all grab a tissue. Amy, this is a treat for us because we have so many great things to talk about, especially, you know, with Gene coming to the table at this time where we're discussing so many cool things happening in Savannah. There's a huge discussion going on about the Civic Center and the Johnny Mercer Theater. Mm-hmm. You may have seen that on WJCL, and these are some of the things we want to talk about.
Absolutely. And really, the theater for the Savannah Philharmonic is top of mind. You know, I think everyone that's been to a concert is seeing that we're selling out a theater of 1,200 seats and really feeling like Savannah needs that next step up in that venue size of the, you know, 2,000, 2,500 seat hall, that to really bring more of the community together so that we can be something for everyone in Savannah, and be able to access that.
Yeah, no doubt. Gene, for those of our listeners who don't know your background, mm-hmm. could you talk a little bit about your journey to Savannah?
Wow. Let me see. So I'm going to go all the way back to, if you want to get the origin story, I started off as a student of double bass at the Eastman School of Music. And towards the end of my time at Eastman, I realized that I actually enjoyed creating and promoting events more than I liked performing. Although I did like performing, but if I had to sit in the bass section of an orchestra for the rest of my life, I think I would have gone crazy. So I got into a program for orchestra management that the League of American Symphony Orchestras had, and I interned with the Cleveland Orchestra and the New Mexico Symphony and the Baltimore Symphony, where I, by the way, I got to go on the road. I got to be Isaac Stern's road manager for 2 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah, and also took care of Maestro David Zinman. I was basically his road manager for those 2 weeks on that Midwest tour. And after that, I went to Hawaii. I was with the Honolulu Symphony for 3 years, a period of my life that I refer to as my exile, because it's very isolated out in the middle of the ocean. I didn't really like living in Hawaii, believe it or not. I went back to visit years later, and I was like, hey, you know, this place isn't so bad. but it wasn't for me at the time, but I came back. I came back and got a job at the St. Louis Symphony, and I worked there for 5 years. And then a position to open up at a small jazz not-for-profit organization. And there was a mutual board member between that organization and the symphony, and he asked if I would consider being the executive director there. And at first I thought no, because I was having a great career in symphony orchestra land, because being director of operations, I was looking to be a general manager or run a smaller orchestra someplace. But I thought it would be interesting to take this on because it was sort of a new type of nonprofit. It didn't really have the same kind of rules. I mean, orchestras are run pretty much the same way everywhere you go, right? But this didn't have any sort of rules to it, so it could be whatever your imagination, could come up with. And
was
I
that
did
a good thing?
What's that?
Was that a good thing?
Well, in this case, I think it was. We grew that organization from $300,000 to a budget of $3.5 million when I left.
And wow.
One of the things that we did was we actually went through a big capital campaign to purchase the building where we were, and we transformed it into a place that's actually one of the best jazz clubs in the world. And during that process, I found out a lot about how acoustics play and how acoustics are engineered into buildings to enhance sound or to get a specific type of venue, a certain type of setting. So, you know, you're going to deal with things differently if you're going to have jazz performed than if you would if you're going to have, you know, spoken word or chamber music. So that particular room was designed to be a great sounding room for jazz ensembles. During the pandemic, I started thinking about what would be next. And I had read about the Savannah Music Festival when I was doing a grant panel. And the Savannah Music Festival actually scored the highest of all the grants that we were reading in the country. So, and it was a pretty impressive group of organizations. So I was sitting on my deck and I said, you know, hey, I wonder if that festival is hiring. And sure enough, they were. Wow. And I've been here now for 2 years.
Wow. That's amazing. And I feel like, you know, Amy, we hear stories all the time about, a lot of us during COVID who decided, let me think about what's going on next, you know, and a lot of change happened here in Savannah in that time.
It really did. I mean, you know, I think I came in October of 20 and Gene was shortly thereafterwards. So, you know, it brought in an opportunity to really assess the landscape of music in the community and figure out what Savannah needed, because here we were with new leadership, and that just brought in a different level of looking at things and different, I would say, different expectations too of what things should be and how we should be integrating music into the community in more levels.
Yeah, absolutely. And now we look at, you know, the conversations that have popped up since then, the change that has happened since then, and the change that's getting ready to happen still. Savannah is a place of change.
Yes.
And growth. And there is so much of that conversation that we want to get into, that we started to talk about, Amy. And the conversation about the Civic Center, and if those of you who have not heard about it, can you kind of give us a little recap of where this conversation started and what's going on with it now?
Absolutely. So, you know, after being here about a year, I ended up in conversations with the city and brought Gene in shortly thereafterwards. And we really were sitting down probably every other month to realize and to think about what this hall is and to really start talking about not just what it could be, but what it's been for Savannah, right? So it was built in the 70s, in the early 70s, but it is historic. It is where the city celebrated victories, mourned losses, had weddings, had graduations. So as soon as we started really hearing that there was even a possibility of it being leveled, it was eye-opening to us, because we wanted to preserve that history. Savannah's all about its history, so we need to preserve that. And there was really an opportunity, and what's on the table right now is an opportunity to restore the Mercer Theater and have the largest restoration of the Oglethorpe plan in the 300 year history of Savannah. So it's a win-win for everyone, because I think, you know, we have seen from our community that the arts belong downtown. Savannah wants to go to them downtown. So if we looked at leveling that, where will we play? How will we grow for the community? Chatham Parkway doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel the right space for that. It belongs downtown, and people want to be downtown.
You don't want to be, one doesn't want to have, you know, a concert hall that's not there. And I've never seen where that's worked. You know, when you think about, you know, great cities like Savannah, you know, and you think about where their big concert hall is headquartered. And I've also seen I've seen a concert hall constructed outside of the downtown area, and people just don't want to go to it because it's too far out. And, And it's also, I think, a real statement. I mean, we want to bring people into the downtown area. We want to show everybody our beautiful downtown space. We want to make sure that it's accessible, something for everybody. And having a venue that the community does have access to on a regular basis, I think, is very important. I mean, we both have some excellent relationships with SCAD, who are very supportive of both of our organizations and work very hard to accommodate us as best as they can. But they're their own business and they have their priorities, and I don't begrudge them that. But even more so, I think, when you think about the Mercer, and Amy hit on this a little bit earlier, it's all part of an ecosystem, right? You have different venues of different sizes, and they accommodate different types of performances. And there are some performances that you're just not going to be able to have at the Lucas. And it's not just the size; it's also the way it's structured. You know, the fly system in the Mercer is big enough to accommodate bigger shows, and not to mention having a shell, an orchestra shell, to make sure that the sound is directed in the right way, so it doesn't just go up into the rafters, and an orchestra pit. So if you Absolutely. Wanted to do a ballet, or you wanted to do Broadway, or anything else, you need to have that. And the fact of the matter is that if that goes away, I don't think it would be built outside of downtown, first of all. Second, it's not coming back right. downtown.
Absolutely.
If it's gone, then it's gone.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I'm thinking about the folks in charge are having serious conversations about them. I mean, we just heard from the mayor, and Mayor Van Johnson says, I think we can do all of it.
Yeah, that's something, and we're really excited to hear the mayor say that. He said that in his inauguration speech, mm-hmm. and he said it repeatedly. So
yeah.
we're thrilled that the mayor and city council is behind it. And I think we keep coming back to that. We need the public, though, to show that they're behind it as well, because it will be an investment for the city. And we need everyone to share their love of the space. Mm. And also having the understanding that the space truly can be magical. So I know, so many people have talked about, the last time I was in there was this issue or there was that issue. And Gene and I are aware of all the issues that are in there.
Yeah.
However, we brought an acoustician down, or I should say the city brought an acoustician mm-hmm. down, who's one of the world premier acousticians. And he did an assessment of the building last May, and he said it's possible.
Yeah.
And what I think we need to remember is that it was built by a world-class acoustician mm-hmm. in the 70s. And through just misunderstanding of sound panels and acoustics, it started being dismantled. And I hope that in our show notes for this, we can put some photos of what it used to look like and what it looks like now, so people can really understand that the challenges they're hearing now from everything from spoken word and mics and reverb are all fixable, because it is a fantastic shell.
Mm-hmm.
And everything can be done inside it to make it be magical again, because right. it was magical. It was actually one of the best halls in the country.
Yeah, if you read some of the reviews from the opening concerts, the acoustics get high praise. But over time, for a number of different reasons. So when you're in the Mercer and you look up, you'll see these like pods. They're sort of like ovals in the ceiling, and the people may think that they're decoration, but they actually serve a very important purpose, and that is to reflect sound, direct sound in the right way, right? And what happened is a lot of those panels that were originally there were removed, and for a number of reasons. Sometimes it was because they needed to put more lighting in for people on stage, or you know, I'm not sure what some of the other ones are, but
I'm not sure
either. But they took out these elements as if they were just decoration, and they were actually serving this really important function. I know that acoustics can be fixed, and it happens all the time. And even rooms like Carnegie Hall, you know, they've had acousticians come in and work on that to improve the sound, if you can believe that hall ever needed any improvement. But I've had the Sam Burka, the acoustician who worked with us on Jazz St. Louis's venue. He worked at the Hollywood Bowl. So, you know, everything can be enhanced and things can be fixed. Sometimes it's going to be a bit more expensive. But the good thing is that there was a good design at the beginning. So it really supports the concept that we can have a good sounding room. I mean, I noticed when I was in there, it's murky, right? It's hard to hear. It's hard to hear the full range of sound. But as I said, you know, I've seen a room go from sounding really bad to sounding excellent. And it's and there are people out there who know what they're doing. And a lot of the people out there are actually students, you know, students and disciples of the person who designed it in the first place.
So the person that came down from New York to assess the building was actually the student of the original acoustician.
Oh, wow. Christopher Jaffe
was the original, and the person that came down was his student. Yeah. And so it's phenomenal. And, you know, and I think the other complaint that people have, again, it's fixable. It's that it's not pretty, that it feels cavernous, that it's not inviting. Mm-hmm. And I would agree. Like, when I walk in there, you feel far away from the stage.
Yeah.
You feel like you're in a box from the 70s. But all of that is, as you start addressing the acoustics and you start addressing the space, it's all possible to change. And then going back to the Oglethorpe plan, it's possible to level the, and again, in the show notes, we can put a photo of it, to level the MLK Arena that has significant challenges, and restore the lane. Have the entrance not be from MLK or the parking lot, not have a mystery door that both G and I have walked up to.
It's a rite of passage, right? To go to the wrong end of the Mercer Theater.
and have a beautiful entrance and have a space that feels welcoming to everyone to come into and special for the celebrations of Savannah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's the thing. Instead of talking about what's wrong with it, we should start thinking about what could be right with it. What would we love to see in there? Because the bones are good, right? So we can fix the rest of the structure on it. And it can be a place that people really enjoy coming to. I'm especially excited about the idea of the lobby, because it could allow for better drop off and pick up for folks as they arrive. It can help to give it a sense of grandeur. You know, there's this beautiful staircase in there, and that would be highlighted. So I think that imagine just sitting there. Imagine seeing your favorite. Do you know that it's very difficult to build a venue that's sort of multi-purpose, right? A venue that has to serve the Philharmonic and Mannheim Steamroller or the Trans-Siberian Orchestra or something like that, or a rock band.
Or Savannah Rep.
Jazz, right? Mm-hmm. Because the acoustics, you have you have acoustic music, and then you're going to have highly amplified music. Well, in the plan, and actually built into this building, it was a dampening system that's above those clouds that if they needed to, they could lower these curtains. And the curtains, so if they had a rock show in there, they would be able to lower those curtains, and then the sound wouldn't be as boomy. It wouldn't overwhelm the room. But they fell into disrepair because over time, nobody knew what these things were for. And it's kind of sad. You know, it's kind of sad.
It is. But, you know, going back to just what what Gene was saying about imagining, right? So if you imagine with us, the idea of having the Philharmonic's opening night there for a season, and then having your child's music lessons there, or youth symphony rehearsal, and then graduation could be there. And then you're going to Savannah Music Festival, you're hearing Savannah Rep, you're hearing the voice experience, and then you're experiencing Broadway.
Right.
Yep.
Right. So you can encompass all of this. So you're hearing all of this amazing local music that Savannah's producing all the time.
Right.
In one space that's designed for Savannah. And then you have the shows that can come through. So it could be, and it, and I believe this will happen. So, and it will be a very busy hall that's never dark. So dark in our world is when there's nothing happening there or it's quiet. And, but it could be a constant bustling space. As Savannah grows, it can grow with it.
Yeah. I don't think people are, I'm not sure if people are aware of all the meeting space and ballroom space that exists at the theater just above. I was surprised to see it, but you know, I would imagine that some folks have probably been to events there, but it's been a little while. It's probably been a while. So and people might've forgotten, but you're right. You could have those spaces for youth rehearsals or meetings or dance rehearsal or theater rehearsal or a cocktail reception or a pre-concert lecture for people before a concert. So the possibilities are myriad.
Oh, totally. And I, you know, the community is talking about that, and so many people I know that have grown up in Savannah have even said, gosh, I had no idea there was so much going on in that one building. I had no clue. You know, people that had grown up streets around the corner, no idea, you know. And so for this to open everyone's eyes to say there are so many possibilities, and then to think about the shows and the groups and all of that who will come here now that would not have come here before, because we didn't have a space dedicated to something like that.
And then the people that will come to those shows, right? So it's the individuals in the community and then beyond that will come to these, to those shows to support the arts and discover the arts for the first time. Whereas some people I think are, they're unsure, but a space built by the community for the community is more apt to bring in everyone together.
Yeah. And feels like a win-win, you know, when it's coming to help both parties. Where are we right now in the timeline of things? You know, I feel like when the mayor spoke about everything, it's in city council's talking about everything, and now the public has to come in. And the public has a say. And that's
really
important,
does.
I think, to talk about.
It's very important. And, you know, I think the mayor has shared that he would like public opinion. I think everyone should be on the lookout, and we'll be posting it when that public opinion happens. My understanding is that it'll be 4 days where they'll take people through the theater and hear their thoughts. And I can assure you I'll be there and I'll be out. I'm sure Gene will be there and be out and hearing their thoughts too, because we want to help relay that information. But we'll also be sending out a video where we'll be talking about what it is, and we'll show some images of what it will look like, and the restoration of the Oglethorpe plan as well, and what that will look like for people. And then asking everyone to sign a petition to show the support. So the arts organizations will be sending that out. You can sign. It's a Google form. We just need name and address. And then we'll share that with the mayor and city council so that they can see going into the public opinion phase where people are at too. Right. And I can assure you, like, our chorus members will be out and talking about this and all of it. So, because what we want them to do is to put a resolution on the table that actually states the public wants to save the theater.
Yeah. Right.
And to keep the theater. So I think in 2018, there was a resolution to demolish it. But the world has changed since then, and Savannah's changed drastically since 2018. So we really need that resolution put on the table so that then we can do due diligence, that a feasibility study will happen understanding it. You know, Gene and I have been very clear. I know there can be some skepticism regarding the city of Savannah. Gene and I have been very clear in our conversations with them that as long as we're headed in the right direction and doing it right, we'll be alongside them through this. Yeah. So that's where we're at.
And, you know, if folks have heard from people saying that it's beyond repair, and that is, that's just not true. And as I said before, if we lose it, then we lose something that's, you need a theater of that space for specific things. A lot of people thought that when the arena was built, that you wouldn't have to, you wouldn't need the Johnny Mercer anymore. The arena is just too big for a lot of shows. You know, it's just, it's like a Goldilocks thing for some things. This is going to be just right. And we can't, if we want to bring the Atlanta Symphony to Savannah, it's very hard to fit them on the stage at the Lucas. Cause it's a big group. If we want to bring in, if we wanted to present somebody like Tedeschi Trucks, we would do it at the Mercer without a doubt. There are just some acts that are going to fit into that space, and that's what they need. And if we don't have that, then we're not going to be able to see those types of artists.
Yeah. Yeah. That is a good point. So we limit our programming by how many people we can fit on stage at the Lucas Theater. So, you know, our concert coming up, Verdi Requiem, you're going to see it max out at 140, 150 people. And that's the largest we can go. Mm-hmm. So,
and that's, I mean, that includes the chorus?
That includes the chorus.
So, and, you know, like, and that's, and like, and I don't know if people know that
it's not big.
It's not big for that piece.
Yeah. We've shrunk the orchestra for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is counter to what you would like to have, but you have to do what you have to do.
Right, we have to fit.
Yep.
Yeah. And you're right. It has been the fit for now.
Correct.
You know, and we are about growth and change, and we are about seeing these things, you know, transpire. And you're right. How much has changed since 2018? Oh my goodness.
Absolutely.
How much have we grown as a city, as a community? You know, and we think about the Philharmonic and how much it's grown and changed. And
absolutely.
How much the concerts on the calendar have changed. And oh my gosh, I mean, it continues. And
it
why
really does.
Should we cap it?
Right.
Is a big question.
Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's something magical to see a stage the size of the Mercer Theater packed with musicians. And I'm saying like the stage. So now if you see the Lucas when we're on the stage, you're actually looking at the wings because we're in the wings. We're in the wings. Yeah. We have musicians in the wings.
We're taking wing space. Yeah.
You'll notice they have stage lights on the stand lights in the back because they're not in the lighting. But to see that and have that much sound come from a stage, I don't think Savannah's really experienced it yet. And we just want to bring that.
Right. Yeah. And I think it's just going to be amazing. And it is about the conversation and what the public wants to say and how we get everybody sort of in line. Mm-hmm. You know how it takes to organize things.
Well, yeah.
It takes a minute.
You know, and there, I mean, look, the city, there are a lot of issues that the city faces, just like any city. But arts and culture, you know, especially I've been talking to people about music, you know, a lot. And the interesting thing about it is that it's one thing that has a unique ability to bring people together like nothing else. And I point to a couple facts. One is that every culture in the world, no matter where it is and no matter what sort of, if they're nomadic or if they have, you know, it's a great empire or whatever, they all have a musical tradition. And we start all of our ceremonies with music, and we bring in, and I think about large venues like stadiums that bring people together, but usually when it's for sport, then people are inherently in conflict. But you take that same stadium and you instead of having competitors on the field, you put more chairs to bring more community out there, and then people are joined in unity. That's what music does. That's what music brings us. And we need to have those experiences. I heard this clip of Ramsey Lewis, the jazz pianist, talking about how the ancient Greeks had it right because they had this idea about, you know, trying to attain physical perfection, trying to always improve the mind. But then also they focused on the soul, and the way they did that was through the arts. Mm. And that's that. Wow. I think it was very well said and very poignant to me. I think maybe it's because sounds are sometimes abstract. You know,
yeah.
It makes it a little bit easier for people to. It makes it easier across cultures to convey emotion, perhaps. So it's not just something that's nice to have. I think it's something that's essential.
Absolutely.
And we deserve a world-class concert venue in Savannah of the size of the Mercer. It's got Johnny Mercer's name, Savannah's favorite son, right? Right?
Yeah.
This should be, when I say I'm going to the Johnny Mercer Theater, I'm like, oh man, I'll bet this is going to be something else. Mm-hmm. And it can be. It's going to be like a great testament to its namesake.
Yeah, and I think you're right. It brings its own feeling just with the name. It really does. And
it does.
What a nod to our history. What a tribute. What a red carpet moment for.
We got to accentuate the positive.
I'm saying. Ding, ding. You won the prize for that one. You won the prize. Amy, I think about our Fill the Neighborhood concerts. And the feeling at those concerts are so different from the mm-hmm. from the concerts at the Lucas Theater and other places. There's this connection between Absolutely. the artists and the community. There's this closeness. I feel like we're going to have something similar, very similar to that connection moment. This is going to be different than any other type of concert.
Absolutely. And I mean, and I think just because when this is finished, the community will have done this together.
Exactly.
Right? So if we talk, you know, something for everyone with music bringing everyone together, this can really bring us together. It will no doubt have some challenging conversations, but we grow as a community through those conversations. We grow from putting pieces on the stage and programming music that mm-hmm. is going to push the audience a little, which we do sometimes at the Lucas Theater for our concerts. And, you know, we hear about it. We hear about programs that people love and programs that people do not. But we have to have that. We have to have that conversation so yeah. that, you know, really, to me, this is the community's theater.
Yeah. And I think having those, you know, if the conversations are difficult, I think it's the positive aspect of that is it means that people are passionate about it. And I think that people should be passionate about this. And should care about it because they should demand the best that they can get, you know, because we deserve it.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, and I'll drag Gene into this, but if people have questions on it or they're skeptical or they're unsure, to call us.
Yeah. Call me. Yeah.
We'll happily sit down and we'll sit down together or one-on-one or we'll have the conversations. Then maybe, you know, people aren't sure how to have the conversation with the city of Savannah. We'll have it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we'll have it with them and we'll can pull out drawings and take people through things and talk about what it could be, talk about some of what we've learned in other cities of mm-hmm. what the costs are.
Mm-hmm.
But really, I mean, I think we need the city to get to the point of, like I said, putting the resolution on the table so that we can have the feasibility study. But if there's concern along the way, call us.
Yeah.
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 We'll pick up the phone.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm glad you said that because one of the things that I think the community says about any organization is, I love this organization. I don't know what the needs are until I know what the needs are.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to help until I understand.
Right.
And sometimes you don't understand until you sit down and have a conversation with the very people who are, you know, making the magic happen every day, who are making the calendars, bringing in the artists, putting on the dates, putting it all together, mapping it out. Sometimes you don't know until you sit down and say, hey, can I just ask you about this? Because I'd like to be a part of this. I just don't know how.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Or how it works. You know, I think some of it people don't really understand like Gene said, we have a great working relationship with SCAD, but they're a university and they need to serve their students.
That's right.
So
that's
just calendaring alone, you know, they need to put their stuff on the calendar.
Yep.
And then we get the dates that are left over, right? So that's it is the world's biggest puzzle.
Yeah.
In calendaring everything. And they do a great job over there with that.
Yeah.
But they do have the needs of their students and they're growing.
Yeah.
And they're changing and they're adapting and they're learning. Their students' needs are growing.
Yeah. And so, I mean, and the thing is, like I say, it's an ecosystem. It's not a situation where the Mercer is renovated and all of a sudden we don't have a need for the Lucas or Trustees Theater, right? Every venue plays an important role. Everyone is really critical to the cultural health of the community. So, and even with its limitations, the SCAD has made those spaces available so that we can bring music to the community.
Definitely.
I think I heard someone in the midst of the conversations talk about exactly what you're saying, Gene. It's not about canceling something out. Mm-hmm. It's about leveling up for everyone involved.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what it is. And what you're talking about is like every piece here, every person, every organization, it's about everyone leveling up.
That's right.
That's a great way to describe it.
And I think people have said that the relationship between the cultural institutions has gotten to be, I think, a lot more collaborative. As we've come in, and that lays the groundwork for some real powerful art to come, to Savannah. It was like collaborations. I worked on one that actually produced an opera that went on to the Met, by Terrence Blanchard. And, it was finding those opportunities to work together. If we have space like the Mercer and it's a room that is inviting and sounds great, and we can think about ways that we can use it, we can use it. So.
Right.
And we can come up with ways to use it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You don't have to worry about that.
There's no shortage of ideas.
You don't have to worry about that.
Those are endless in our brains.
We have a big bucket to go to. There's a lot of ideas. Well, we're going to have all of the, I can't wait for everyone, our listeners, to see this. We're going to have pictures. We're going to have the petition when it's available for you to sign. Links for you to see all in our show notes and of course following along on social media, you'll see it there too. But once that goes out, that's the time to share it with other people in the community so that everyone can say, I'd love to get on board.
And we'll continue this conversation as well. Right. And so we'll continue to update because I know it's hard to stay on top of what is happening and when, because we all have busy lives.
Yeah.
And while it's top of mind for Gene and I, it might not be top of mind for everyone. So we'll continue to use the podcast and continue to share with all the listeners sort of regular updates along the way as it progresses and as we continue to need help and support and moving that all forward.
That's right. More on the story as it develops.
.. Here we go. Gene Dobbs Bradford, thank you. So nice to be able to sit down and chat with you in this arena and on this platform. It's a joy.
Oh, it's really been my pleasure.
And the meeting of the executive directors. We should do this more often.
Absolutely. Definitely.
Thank you guys very much.
Thank you.
Welcome to your open invitation to enjoy music with your friends and neighbors. This is the Soundtrack of Savannah. You can also show support by sponsoring a season concert or our Fill the Neighborhood series or annual Fill the Park event in Forsyth Park. You can even sponsor one of our talented musicians or host them in your home during the season. Planned giving from individual community partners to corporate sponsorships creates opportunities for the Savannah Philharmonic to grow and also allows you to leave a legacy, ensuring the organization continues to entertain, inspire, and build community for generations to come. For more information on sponsorship levels and a full list of concerts and community events, please visit us at savannahphilharmonic.org. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram, and be sure to subscribe to the Sav Phil podcast you're listening to right now so you can be in the know, behind the scenes, and center stage at your Savannah Philharmonic.